Hi, I'm Mike, I'm at it.
Hi, Michael.
And I'm not really pleased to be here. And, it's funny, when Dean said to me, you know, he sent me some dates to come down here and do a chair, and I thought I was clever. I thought, I'll put this one in second because it's the bank holiday. And when I was cycling down, I thought, it's nice and quiet, no one's going to be here today. I thought, good boy, good. And I got here, and everyone's here, or more or less, everyone's here, you know what I mean? And, I just want to thank Sally for a really great share. And and when you were sharing, it went too quick, you know? And I didn't want to share myself, you know what I mean? I got a bit nervous, and I know what that's about. It's about that fear, you know? Fear to me is like everything can run, you know, everything can run, or face everything and recover. And for me, I have to face my fear, and that's how I recover. And just want a few thank yous as well, you know, thank Dean for asking me to do the chair. And God, this meeting, you know, brings back memories. I think I am right to say this. I was the first speaker to share at this meeting. I don't know how many years ago, I don't know if it was 10 years or what. I mean, Gary, and I had a commitment there as well, and I couldn't see it through because of my girlfriend was ill at the time. And and it's nice that I'm still back, I'm still clean, you know, for the grace of God and this program. And it's funny, you know, when I cycle, I listen to tapes, and I always plug into the track of square tapes. And the chairs that I hear are fantastic, you know what I mean? It's really gone on to really be a really top meeting, and I love it, you know. And I remember I took Gary on the other day from Brixton meeting, who was doing the chair. Oh, no, he wasn't doing the chair, he was down there, and I took him on. We were talking about this meeting, and he said to me, Mike, this meeting so saved lives, you know. And he said, when I sleep, he said, when he sleeps at night, the meeting saves lives. He said, even when people relapse, you know, it saves lives. And I never thought about that. And I thought, God, I hope I don't relapse, you know what I mean? And, you know, this illness, you know, is, I get really angry with this illness. You know, you read the paper, someone relapsed a day of footballer. Someone in EastEnders relapsed after 12 years. This illness kills, you know, it really does. And I hate it with a passion. And I'm really grateful that I've stayed there, you know, for the grace of God, for the grace of you lot, for the grace of working the 12 steps. You know, I just know for me, you know, I mustn't feed my addict. You know, I mustn't act out and feed it on drinking drugs. Because, you know, it says it in that first step, you know. It sets up that compulsion inside of me. Once I start, I can't stop. And I've seen a lot of my friends die as well. And it really frightens me. You know, every time I've seen someone relapse, I've never seen them come out wearing a shirt and tie and say, Mike, it was really good out there, you know. You know, some people, they don't make it back. I've been in meetings in Chelsea with my mates. Then after, you know, one of my mates died a couple of months ago. He went home, put a belt around his neck and hanged himself. You know, because he lost his partner and he couldn't stop using another friend of mine. He was a hairdresser, and he died as well. In fact, the more is dead, you know, through relapse of this illness kills. And we're the lucky ones that we're still there, you know. And I just pray that I can keep coming back. And I just share about my week. You know, I've got a new sponsor. I'm doing a step four. I've done a few step fours in this program. And this guy, when I was going to my sponsor's house, I've never been to his house before, and he took me up to Dulwich. You know, I grew up in Dulwich as a kid. And I showed him my primary school, and he started to speak about my childhood and stuff like that. And when I was driving my sponsor to his house to read up my step four of him, I noticed that when he got the broccoli, he went to the cemetery. And opposite the cemetery, there was these flats. And in that same cemetery, my kid mum got buried. You know, my best friends had died of this illness. And I thought, how did this happen? You know, I didn't know this guy, where he lived or not. And when we were doing my step four, we were talking about my childhood, you know. You know, how I grew up as a kid and all that. And I felt really emotional when I was doing my step four, you know. I just know for me, I had a lot of pain. You know, when I was reading that my childhood to him, I was getting a bit, I was reading that slow, and he said to me, Mike, you all right? I went, no, keep going, because I didn't want to sit in the pain. I just wanted to read it and go, you know what I mean, because I don't like my pain. But I just know for me, my pain won't kill me. Drugs will kill me, but my feelings won't kill me. I know that today. And when we speak about my childhood, I was telling him, you know, how I grew up. You know, I just shared with how I grew up. I grew up in a dysfunctional family. My mum, you know, she had 5 kids, and I remember my dad, he wasn't around, you know, and I used to wet the bed, I used to be scared of the dark, and my mum had big arms like Popeye, all the neighbours used to be scared of her, she used to strangle me if I'd wet the bed, and I remember I was so scared of her that I used to get a plastic bag and tie it around my penis at night, and it used to burst sometimes. And she used to hit me over there with a broomstick, and I used to run. I was always a runner on my toes all the time. And, you know, my first addiction was stealing. You know, I used to nick sweets, and I used to nick bikes. And I nicked bikes and I painted them like they was my bikes. You know what I mean? And I used to jump over to people's houses, back gardens, and nick, break into the factories and nick jeans. I used to go to school with brilliant boots on and jeans. And oh, I stole everything, you know what I mean, at a young age, because my dad wasn't there, you know, and I craved attention, you know, I come from that empty hole in me, I wanted it filled up with love, and my mum was really, I feel sorry for my mum now, because I realised my dad dumped her, and she couldn't handle it, and I was the oldest kid, the oldest boy in the family, and I got it. I was taken away from my mum for my protection. I went into a convent. I was in there for like a couple of months. And I split my tongue and stuff like that, and I came out of the convent, I went back to my mum. And I ended up getting into trouble with older guys, and I remember at the age of 12, you know, I was sent to juvenile court, and I committed 30 burglaries at the age of 12, and I remember being in a prison van, you know, a big green prison van with bars in it. I remember sitting in one of those in the back of a school, and one of the social services going to the Hollies children's home. You know, when I got to the children's home, they went, "Wow, you committed all these burglaries." And I thought, no, I just wanted to get away from my mum. And, you know, I could wet the bed, you know, I mean, I could get food and all that. And it was really sad. And I was given a probation officer as well, you know. And I stayed at that children's home for about, I don't know, 6 months or a year. And I went back to my mum. I think I must have been about 13 then. And I was still running away. I didn't go to school. I was always on my toes, you know. And my policeman said to me, "Right, you've got to stop sleeping at old people's houses. We're going to send you to a boarding school." And I was sent to a special needs boarding school. And I remember this school in the West Country in Newbury. And I liked it because I could get 3 meals a day, you know what I mean? And wet the bed and, you know, and it was a nice school. But, you know, my first fantasy world was fantasy. You know, I was an escapist. I could fantasize about anything. And I remember when I was at school, I used to lock myself away in the room and I used to listen to the Jackson 5, going to the fantasy, wishing that I was in their group and that, you know. And I realised I was in a lot of pain, but I just used to go into fantasy all the time. I'd sit in school, look out the window in fantasy. And I used those fantasies, I'll share it later, how I used it in a destructive way. And I remember being in that school, I was in that school for a couple of years, and my teacher used to say to me, "Mike, you know, if you don't listen, you're going to end up in the detention centres, ball schools and prisons." And I thought, that sounds really exciting, you know. And at half term, I'd go home, and home was for me, at half term was I'd go on the streets. I grew up in Brixton on the front line, and with all the gangs and all that, and I got involved with pickpocketing. And I used to work at the bus stops, a bit like Oliver Twist, you know what I mean? And I used to work at the bus stops and stuff like that, and the tubes and all that. And I got arrested when I was about 15. I was sent to a detention centre. It was like a boot camp. And I remember marching and screws coming in, looking for dust and all that, in the rooms and all that. And I thought, I'm not going to go back there again. I got arrested again at Marble Arch, a pickpocket, and I was sent to Mayfair's Crown Court. And I remember the judge friend, he said, "My name's Judge Friend, but I'm no friend of yours." And he sent me to Ballstall. And I remember being in the scrubs. I was about 16. I remember this kid said to me, "Mike, have you ever got a dead joint? You know about it." And I said, "What's a dead joint?" I remember the screw sticking a letter underneath the door. And he said, in the letter, it was my girlfriend at that time, she was pregnant. She said, "I don't want to go out with you no more." And that was the first time I felt physical pain, emotional pain. And I found out that she was sleeping with my best mates. And then what happened to me is I couldn't cry. You know, I turned my fantasies into destructive fantasies. I started to make love to the pillar. You know, I think about my girlfriend sleeping with my mates. And that's when I started to use fantasy in a destructive way. I was in Ballstall for about a year, went back, done another one. And I thought to myself, I had one girlfriend, I'll have three girlfriends, one leaves me, I've got two leaves me, I've got one, you know what I mean? And I remember when I was in prison as well, the kids used to say to me, if you go to the Old Bailey, the van goes on the turntable and it turns. And I thought, yeah, that sounds really exciting. And I ended up going to the Old Bailey, and you know, I've got 3 years and 2 years, and I spent half of my life in prisons from the age of like 15 to the age of about 24. I didn't get no parole. I used to smoke dope, I used to drink alcohol when I was a kid. I came out of prison and I saw that film Scarface. And I thought, yeah, this is the guy I want to be like. And, I was always getting off in my inner fantasy and I sold drugs just like that. You know, I had a flat in Hampstead, I used to go street photos every night. I was snorting, drinking champagne, you know, popping pills. You know, I suppose in a way I was a bit of a plastic gangster, I wanted everyone to like me. You know, a pound up was really my god. A drink was my god. Cocaine was my lover. I had three girlfriends, I'd be acting out, getting into fantasy. I had all that destructive behaviour. And I got really paranoid as well. And you know, I mean, you know, I used to watch this film called Rick's Pipe, I haven't even seen it, and he takes the pipe and he's sitting in the pipe. He says that he got the pipe and the pipe says, Rick's, don't listen to them. You know I love you. Keep me topped up all times. And I'll be on the phone to my friends laughing. I said, yeah, that Rick's a buyer. The pipe said, I love you, Rick's, keep me topped up. And that's what I do, you know what I mean? I'll be smoking my pipe and I got hooked, as you do, you know what I mean? And I got hooked on the crack. And I had a lot of money. I was a daredevil. I had a nice car. And, you know, my addiction took me to my knees in the end. I lost everything, you know, for smoking and drinking. And my girlfriend got fed up with me as well. And something happened to me, really lucky, and I need to share it. And I didn't go to school. I was always good at driving and, you know, I wanted to get a job. And I remember this guy come up to me, his daughter's a famous singer, I don't really want to break out with him. And he said to him, like, you know, I want you to look after my daughter. Like, you know, security and driving and all that, and I did. I ended up working for Island Records, and it's mad, I ended up having my own company, driving limousines and looking after all the pop stars, and I earned a lot of money, you know what I mean? And my life changed. I wasn't smoking crack, but I was snorting and drinking, and I had three girlfriends, and my behavior wouldn't change. And in the end, you know what I mean, my partner got fed up with my two kids as well, and she walked out of me, and I ended up, you know, doing something that I really regret. You know, I used to pray a lot when I was in prison. I'd say, please God, get me off this court case, I'll get my girlfriend back. And I got off. She came back to me and I got hooked on a crack pipe, my partner and my kids. And one day she left me and didn't come back to me. And I lost everything. I lost my business, sold my car, sold everything in my flat, my TV, video. And I sold the washing machine, everything. And the last thing I sold before I went to treatment, I sold my bed for one rock, and I was left with a little black cat, and if I could have put him on the pipe, I would have. The gift of desperation. And, yeah. At the time, it was funny, but it wasn't at that time, you know. I was dribbling, didn't want to let that last smoke out. And, yeah, you know, I went into treatment. I went into a detox, and that's where my journey started. I walked in there, and there was a guy, that, a white guy that I knew from the room, from prison, and he's still clean now. I think he's like 25 years clean. Does H&I. I remember Dave, and I said, Dave, I said, you look well. He said, Mike, you look like shit. You got to stay out, you know. And, you know, he was the only guy that I really trusted because he'd been where I'd been. He was a junkie, he was a thief, you know what I mean? And I saw him cleaned up. But you see addicts, when they get clean, they get these nice white eyes. And I remember saying, you know, it was sick roads I was in there. And people used to walk out of there. The women used to walk out of there to get crack. And, you know, and my people walk out. And that's the first time I could ever feel my addiction in my head saying, Mike, get out, get me some crack, get me some drink. It was like the demons were talking to me in my head. And what I'd done, what I still do to this day, I went upstairs in the dormitory, I always remember it, and I hit my knees. I went, please God, keep me here. Keep me here, please God, don't let me go. And I prayed every day in City Roads. Everyone had kind of relapsed and walked out, and I stayed for the 3 weeks. And the counsellor said to me, right, you're going to go to a treatment centre. They took me to a treatment centre, and Western Super Mayor, and I walked into this treatment centre, big ass. Like Eddie Murphy looked at it from Trading Place, looked at the pictures. I thought, I'd nick that. The women, I love her, you know what I mean? And you know, I'm going to be honest here, the women, they saved my life. In the groups, they confronted me. They said, we want to confront someone. And the counselor said, well, who do you want to confront? I'd like to confront Mike. He tried to chat me up. If I was white, I would have gone with him. Pete, there's a girl that a lot of people know there called Layla. You know, she even stopped me. She used to stop me from walking out. You know, the love that I got from the fellowship. My mate Phil as well, he was in City Road to me. He used to say to me, Mike, you can do it. Stay, don't go. And Phil would look after me from City Road. He'd wait for me to come back, go to the treatment centre. And I remember this guy, you know, he was my best friend in treatment, and he said to me, Mike, I'm going out for the weekend. This is my work, so I'll be back on the Monday. And on the Monday, I got called in the office, and the counselor said to me, Mike, do you remember Phil? I said, yeah, he was only about 30, Phil, younger, right, man. But he was my best buddy, and he said, do you remember Phil? And I went, yeah. I said, he died. I said, what? I said, he died. How? When he went home, he had a cocktail, him and a cocaine, injected it, and his heart stopped him. Jesus. That was the first time I realised, you know, I was up against life and death. And they said to me, Mike, the key ring, if you go on the edge, you'll fall off. If you go in the middle, you'll get saved. You know, they said, if you don't know what NA's got, we'll find you back in misery. You know, all my life, I've done it my way. You know, and I thought I'd do it their way. In that time, you know, they took me to a treatment centre. They took me to a meeting in Bristol. I remember walking to this meeting, I think it was an AA meeting, and they had shirt and ties on, and I was really paranoid, and I thought, they're the old pill. They set me out. It's on me, you know, that one, you know, the addict thinking, you know. And, you know, people in the meetings as well, it said to me, Mike, in the treatment centre, get honest, get real. I could never get honest. Everything that came out of my mouth was a lie. The counselor said to me, what do you do for a living? I said, I'm going to import and export. You know what I mean? I was a liar, I was a cheat. You know what I mean? I couldn't read, I couldn't write, I couldn't look after myself. But that's the truth being known, you know. I was a dealer, you know, I used women. And I stayed in that treatment centre for 3 months, and I heard a guy share the old times. I love old times, I don't care what no one says, because if it wasn't for the old times, you wouldn't be here. They'd walked our walk. You know what I mean? You know, it ain't about clean times, it's about knowledge. Old times have got knowledge, and I learned. When I was in prison, I used to listen to the top criminals, and they taught me a lot. And you know, in treatment, I was listening to an old timer, and I had to use the same method. He said, this is what I do. I don't hang out with people I grew up with. I've got a sponsor, I work the steps. You know, and I pray, and I do this service, and I do all this stuff. And I listened, and I completed the treatment. I'd done about 6 months in that treatment centre, and I got my dad in, and I thought I was cured. And they said to me, Mike, you're not going now, you're going to go to an adult child treatment centre. And they sent me to Western Supermare. It was by law, I went to Western Supermare. And the counsellors took me right down when I was 12 years old. And what happened to me when I was 12? I was sexually abused by psychiatrists. You know, and my counsellor said to me, Mike, how could you give love? You never had it. You know, and I cried and I cried. They said to me, Mike, you know, I spent a year in treatment. They said, you need to go to college, learn how to read and write, you need to look after yourself. And what I loved about recovery, people in recovery give me unconditional love. Even to this day, I crave unconditional love. I never had it. My mum was violent. My dad wasn't around. I was always on my toes. And I've got it from you guys, unconditional love. And I completed this. When I was in treatment, I'd done step 1 to 5. And I remember doing my steps in the treatment. I remember in the treatment center I was in, when I finished my step 4, there was about 30 of us holding hands, and we burnt it, you know, the step 5. And I thought I was cured. It goes up in the flames, you know what I mean? And, you know, behold it, that's when my journey started, you know what I mean? And I spent a year in treatment, and I got out of treatment, and I got involved with, like, taking a meeting in Western Supermare. I think I was the first black guy in Western Supermare at that time. And need to get that one out. Yeah, it was the best place that I've ever been. You know, I was like a kid. I went into treatment when I was about 35, but I was a kid, I was about 18, 19. I'd done football, I'd done martial arts, I was working at club doors actually, which is a bit mad, you know, there's drink around and women, and you know, I spent 5 years in Western Sydney, man, it saved my life. I had a relationship, it went wrong, I was dishonest and I told her, someone in the room said to me, tell her the truth, which I shouldn't have told her, you know, talking about honesty, you know what I mean? Mad, and broke her heart, and we ended up coming back to London. The relationship didn't continue, and I was 5 years clean, I always remember it. I got a job working for a newspaper, can you believe it, look after editor daily, because, you know, and they said to me, people in recovery said to me, Mike, get involved in service, and I said, what can I do? They said, do H&I. They said, that's the best service you can do at H&I. And I've done H&I. You know, I took the meeting in Highdown Prison, once with scrubs, I'd done H&I, and it really saved me, you know what I mean? Carrying a message in there. And when I was doing H&I in the prison, I saw my friends that I grew up with, saw this guy that I was handcuffed with going to Blunderston. He was in the meeting, and I was taking it. I was sharing, I'm taking it. And I said, what are you doing here? And he said, Mike, I've got life. I said, what happened? He said, I had some bad gear. And ended up stabbing someone, and I saw the power of this illness, you know. And why I like H&I as well, it kept me grounded. You know, I grew up in prisons and I knew I had to give back. And, you know, I was 5 years clean, you know, I thought I was cured. I got involved with another relationship, I went to the World Convention in America. And, you know, the person that I was going out with, she was really quite big in NA, and, you know, they say, you want to know who you are. Get involved with a relationship, and I was really jealous and possessive. And I used to follow around and stuff like that, and it was really horrible. And I got taken out of the convention by the old timers. They said, Mike, you got to stay away from your partner. So they took me to Alcatraz, you know, to calm me down, you know. And the old timers said to me, Mike, go back to step one, because your power is over people, places, and things. And it was really painful, you know, and I knew why I was like that. I was very possessive, because I was insecure, I was frightened, you know, I'm a control freak. When she spoke to other blokes in the program, I got jealous, I got frightened, I thought it was going to take away. It was all my stuff, and I had to work on that stuff, and I stayed in that relationship for like, I don't know, about a year or not, and we split up, a runoff actually. You know, and this is what's happened to me, and you know, the steps have really helped me a lot. You know, I was always told that the steps are there to stop us from destroying ourselves. You know, that's step one, you know, powers over people, place, and thing. And step one to me as well is about my thinking, my emotions. You know, my thinking ain't good sometimes. I can get really insecure, I can get frightened. And try and do other people's thinking, you know what I mean? And I think people like to get me, they're not. You know, it's my head, you know? And that step two is really important to me, coming to believe in a power greater than myself, it ain't me. Two addicts is a power greater than me. When I come out and speak my truth, you know, it's a power greater than myself. It's my thinking, you know, my disease is in my head. You know, it's not in the drink and the drug, it's in my head, it's in my thinking. And that's what I've got to do, I've got to change my thinking. And step three, you know, he says back, we made a decision to turn our world and our life over. I do that today as well. I pray every day. I made a decision to turn my world over as much as I can, you know. And it's about action. You know, I love that saying in recovery, action brings about change, thinking brings about more thinking. I have to do the action. And I love step four as well, because step four shows all my character defects. You know, I'm jealous, possessive, I've got ego, I've got pride and greed, I'm lustful, you know. All these defects are crippling me. And also, when I was done my step four, my sponsor said to me, look at all your assets. Because I was always beating myself up. I'm a bad person, I'm a cheat, I'm a liar. You know, and he said to me, you're a good father, you do H&I, you go to work, you pay bills, you pay tax, Jesus. And, you know, and that freed me as well, do you know what I mean? And I had to go through the steps, you know, six and seven, the unforgettable steps. It's about, you know, willingness to change my character defects. And one of my worst character defects as well has been lust in this program. You know, when I got to 10 years, you know, I share about this, you know, so Sally shared about it, she nearly relapsed. I nearly relapsed after 10 years. You know, when I got 10 years, I remember, you know, I had a house, I had a girlfriend, I'd been working with Man United because I do like close protection there, and I was driving through Leicester Square, and I thought I got 3 stripes, and I ended up going around my ex-girlfriend's house in Leicester Square, and I remember I bought a bottle of wine, and I went in her flat, and all I could see was legs, and then she took out the crack pipe, the marijuana, and I sat there and I drew the curtains. I didn't want God to see me. you know, and I knew why I was there, you know what I mean? I was there to act out, to get my knees made, to be truthful, you know what I mean? And when she was smoking that crack pipe, my head went, why don't I ever smoke? And it was like, do you know what saved me? I swear to this day, now I always share it, it scared me. What saved me is that I had to take the meeting in Hightown Prison the next morning, and I had this little glimmer of hope. I don't know where I got it from, and I went, Mike, if you pick up, you are not a newcomer, you're going to be a newcomer, you can't go to those meetings no more. And I don't know what happened, I walked out of that girl's flat. I was so lucky. And I walked out of that girl's flat and I went to the meeting, to the prison, and I shared it. My friends were laughing, you know, in the prison. And it was a close shave. And a week after that, I was in Devon, looking after the kids. So I used to look after kids as well, with the ex-police and that. And I sat my English attendant. And I ended up with Oswald. And I remember reading the book, I think it was about if you do harm to others, you relapse or, you know, you pick up. And I remember tears falling down my eyes. You know, and I knew why. It felt like my higher power said to me, you little shit, you got a choice to turn left or turn right. And I went back and I went through the steps again. And it was my sponsor, you know, I really loved my sponsor. He took me through all the steps again. And I remember, like, in his garden, I broke down crying, and he said, you know, we was doing step 4. He said, you know, write down all your resentments. I was resentful towards my mum, my dad, the police, my ex-girlfriend, everyone. You know, and he said, all right, so we'll look at your part in it. I thought, my part in it? I ain't got no part in it. They done it to me. You know, he was like, I wanted to chuck him out the window, you know, my sponsor. But it was true. I'm the guy that was selfish, self-seeking, frightened, dishonest. I punished women because they slept with my mates. You know, I hated society, the police, you know, fooled banks. You know, I used and abused women, acted out of them. You know, I had no respect for no one. You know, I lost my kids. You know, they went into a foster, mothers and babies home and all that. You know, and I had to look at all that stuff and it was painful. And I remember going through the rest of the steps and I got to step 10 and I broke down crying on my sponsor and I cried and I cried. And he said to me, Mike, what do you want to do? He said, what's the matter? I said, I want to get well. He said, you will get well. He said, you pray every day, you do service, right? You help newcomers, right? And you do a gratitude list every day and you do inventory, right? And look at your partner. He said, you will get well. And you know what, guys? You know, a pen used to be to me, I could put it in a bottle and I smoke crack in it. You know, today a pen saved my black arse. You know, every day, right, I do 20 minutes of writing inventory. You know, and it cleans out my head. I just know for me, when I do action, and every day I do 10, 11, 12, that's what I do. I work the steps every day. My sponsor said to me, he only takes 20 minutes, half hour. He said, how long do you smoke crack for? 10 hours, 12 hours. He said, well, what's half an hour doing infantry? Gratitude, let's find out newcomers doing service. And this is the stuff that keeps me clean. And, you know, I am now like 22 years, 3 months clean. Yeah, man. Thank you. Yeah. And to me, you know, that's a miracle for where I come from. I couldn't read when I came in there. I'm dyslexic. And the steps have taught me how to read, you know, and, I owe my life to this program, you know what I mean? And the love that I've got and the friendship that I've got here, it keeps me out, you know? And, you know, when people say, you know, one of my sponsors say to them, when you get angry, resentful, pray for people. I didn't used to believe that. You know, I hated that when people say, you get angry, say so, pray for them. I want to chin them or, you know, whatever. And I tell you what, I feel like my kids, all three of them, you know, my daughter, mum died, and my daughter, one of my daughters, my oldest daughter, she got hooked on crack and drink, and I ended up seeing her in Malta Hospital, and it was the most painful thing I've ever seen, your own daughter on crack. You know, all her kids have been taken away from her, and she needed my help, and I helped her get cleaned up a bit. And she went into treatment, she's done really well. She got like a couple months, and when she came out of treatment, she fell in love with some guy, you know. And we ended up like burning houses and stuff like that. He ended up getting 3 years, and she was pregnant, and she lost her kid, and she went into prison. And I had no contact with her for a little while, and I used to pray on her as well. And the other day, I saw this girl who just looked just like my daughter. And somebody said to me, phone her up, and I phoned her up. She said, how did you get my number, Dad? She said, I've just come out of prison, you know, and I made contact with her again, and she's on a tag, you know, and she's gone into the rooms again, you know. And these are the kind of miracles that I've seen happen, you know, in my other son and my daughter. My son just got a job, first time ever, you know. So what I'm really trying to say, when I pray, things happen, they do get better. And I think it was a year ago or 15 months ago, my boss died as well. And I had to leave my house. I went out of my house and went back living with my mum in Kenyan. And I went back and I lost my job. And for the first time in like, I was like 21 years clean, I was at this place that I thought, what am I doing now? You know, I had no job, I had no income coming in. And I thought, how's this going to get better? And I went to meetings and I shared and I prayed and I done inventory every day. And I thought, you know, God ain't going to help me no more. I might as well go back out in the street and steal. Because that's what happens to me. When I ain't got money, I get angry. You know, I'm going to take my will back. And I thought, how's it going to get better? And I went to meetings and I prayed. My mum's house was all leaking, all the walls, all the house was flooded up for weeks and months. I just got back from Thailand, you know. I went to Thailand. I've been everywhere, you know. And I went to Thailand and I was going to get married and it didn't happen. And talk about sabotaging relationships. And I got back and I was left alone with my mum in this flat. This is what I'm really saying. I was really in a dark place. And I thought, this program can't help me. And I was praying, going to meetings, people in the pub, in his rooms are helping me, you know, helping me out and stuff like that. And it's this mad, after a couple of months, I ended up sorting out my mum's house. The council fixed all the roof, painted back all the carpet that was soaking and everything for months. And I ended up, you know, I could see things happening, like that, my mum's flat getting all fixed up and stuff like that. Then all of a sudden, I got a phone call out of the blue. Mike, where are you? You know, we've got a job for you. You know, you got to go, you know, I look after footballers as well, down the tunnel. They said, you got to go, you know, to Wembley, and you got to go down there, you got to do this, and I end up, the phone started to ring. I've got another call, got to go on stage with the top artists, then another call come. Then I've got another call saying that you should look after all the top diamonds, so I was on Bond Street. They said, you come highly recommended. You know, we'd like to offer you a job as well. And I ended up being like, fucking mad, it'd been like, back on my feet again. You know what I mean? It was mad. It's like, I'm back on my feet, took my mum to the Caribbean, you know what I mean? I'm up and running even now. And I'm thinking, I was at this dark place. My mum's house is flooded, I'm broke, I'm $5,000 in debt, I've got no hope, it ain't happening. And all of a sudden, my mum's house gets fixed up, and I'm back up and running again. And now, you know, I'm good, as you can see, you know what I mean? I'm working, I'm happy. And to me, that this program works, it's the miracles. You know, if I pick up a drink and a drug, all bets off. I know that for a fact. You know, and because, you know, I do the right things come. I'm not, and I don't really, kind of feel funny to share that because I don't really believe in miracles, but it does happen. You know, like I felt my sisters, you know, my kids, and I've been praying for them, and now I've got a relationship with my kids, my sisters, my mum, my dad. You know, I'm up and running, and it's down to the program, because I work a spiritual program. I work a spiritual program every day, it's like my medicine. I come here to grasp up my addict, you know. I do 5 meetings a week. You know, my addict is busy, he's got A-levels, you know, he's always wanting to destroy me, you know what I mean? And I've seen it in sex addiction as well. You know, some people are scared to talk about sex addiction. This illness, my addict switches. It goes from drink, drugs, sex, money, and food. You know, I don't have to say this, shouldn't really say it. Thanks. I had to go into treatment again when I was about 15 years clean for, like, you know, around sex addiction as well. Because I was using women and getting hit off from getting the fantasy. And the counselor said, like, you got to use your program just like you did, you know, working at NA stuff. And I went to this other, I had to go to another program, an S program, and I was in there and I couldn't get step one, two, and three. My ex-girlfriend would be funny, I'd be acting out of her. And she was like, my drug. And I'm thinking, how is this happening to me? And I felt like shit afterwards. You know, I remember going to this S program and I couldn't get like 30. I was like a newcomer. You know what I mean? And I went in and I saw people from NA, AA, you know, you'd see them in there. You know, because the illness, it switches, it's really clever. And I remember, you know, my sponsor put me in a celibate. He said, no sex, no relationship for a while. And I remember I was in a meeting and I knew this girl from another, I knew this girl from the rooms. And I phoned her up and I said, come, let's go out for coffee. And she said, meet me in Knightsbridge. So I went out to Knightsbridge and she came in this flat. This flat must be about £5 million flat. And I'm in there. He said, Mike, come on, let's have some fun. And I went, I can't, I'm on celibate. You know, I can't do it, you know. And have you ever seen a man trying to fight with a woman? This woman's attractive. And I'm thinking, damn, what is wrong with this black guy? She looked like Joan Collins when she was younger. And she's trying to get hold of me. And I was going, I can't, please, don't, please, can't. Right? And then I'm trying to fight her off. And people came to the police saying, look, yeah, I've got that. You know, I'm trying to fight her off. And I'm in this flat. And the time's getting on, you know, when the time gets on. The phone rang, she went, oh, Mike, go away in the bedroom for me. You know, and I thought, yeah, I'm going away in the bedroom. She's going to go away for now. Got in the bedroom, lied on the bed. That was it. She came in, bang, all hell broke loose. I lost. And I had to find out my sponsor, and he was from there, and from the other program. I found out my sponsor, and I said, guess what happened? He said, what? I said, He said, Mike. He says, I can't sponsor you no more. I said, what? I thought, I come out, I'm 4 months to go back in. I thought, like, shit, you know what I mean? I was trying to, like, stay clean for, like, acting out with this girl. And then she's kind of, like, corrupted me, poor me, you know? Anyway. The next day, the woman finds me up. She says, Mike, I've just gotten to my sponsor. I can't have nothing to do with you. I've lost my sponsor and the God. Can you believe it? My sponsor, he had like 9 years clean. Anyway, and tell you what happened. My sponsor eventually he relapsed, picked up a drink. And the girl, she went her way. And I ended up, you know, completing those steps. Because I actually done what I had to do. I sustained from everything. And it was just painful. You know, I came into this program, I had to put down all my toys. This is what this journey's been about for me. It's been like coming to school. You know, coming, I had to put down crime. I had to put down the drink, the drugs, the sex. You know, my illness, it just goes, it travels. And on the last bit as well, my illness then went on to food. I'm watching football at night, I've got 3 gold teeth in my mouth. And I'm watching matches today and I've got bars of chocolate and I'm eating there and peanuts. For months and months, comfort myself. Next thing I knew, my gold teeth fell out. And the dentist says, no, I said, Mike, well, you've got to stop eating it. And I'm eating chocolates again and that one's gone. And I'm thinking, my head is just moving around me. Right? Then I got a letter from the doctor saying I've got to come to the doctor's, have a blood test. And I thought, I'm fit, I go running, I go cycling, I go swimming, I'm a fit guy. I've gone to the doctor, they said, Mr. Dunn, you've got diabetes, more or less. You got to stop eating. So, do you see what's happening now? My addict, for all the years, it's gone from drink, drugs, money, sex, and it's gone on the food. And I've just surrendered on the food one as well. The doctor said, thanks, the doctor said, eat popcorn. So I don't have 1 box pack of popcorn, I have 2 boxes of popcorn. What? I'm an addict, you know? One is too many, 5 is never enough. You know, but this is the illness for me, you know? And, this goes on, and this is how it's been for me. And all I can say is that, you know, this program really works. I love praying. I pray every day. I do inventory every day. I do service in City Roads now. Take the meeting there, thanks to Gary. You know, and when I go back to City Roads now, it brings me to my knees. You know, this is, I'm so lucky to have this precious gift, but I have to maintain it. My 22 years can't keep me clean. You know, I have to maintain it. It's what I do on a daily basis. You know, my head tells me lies. You know, it's when I come out and I speak my truth and I do service and I help newcomers, that is when I get this program. You know, but I keep coming back. I'll never be cured. I've gone to the Caribbean, after a week I get bored, I want to come back here to the meetings. I've gone to Thailand, I'm just shuttling. I went to Thailand, I was in Bangkok, I was looking for a meeting, couldn't find one. And you know what, my iPad was good. The hotel I stayed, there was a meeting in the lobby every day. I went there with my slippers on. And as I walked in, they went, "You're doing the chair." And they looked after me, and they looked after me. You know, and I'll leave it there. Thanks for listening.